Welcome to the Jay Morton Podcast. This is the second of seven episodes that touch on the mindset strategy I explored in my recent book, Soldier. I'm Jay, and I'll be joined for each episode by a special guest who has very definitely earned respect in their own life adventures. Before we get into this episode, I'd like to say a big thank you to our sponsors, Harley-Davidson. Today's subject is opportunity, and the recent opportunities I've had to try out some of the Harley bikes is one I'm grateful for. We've got some exciting adventures coming up together, so why not give them a follow on Twitter at Harley_UKI or Instagram at Harley_Davidson_UK to share the experience. Speaking of shared experiences, my special guest today is Andrew Cotton. Andy is a big wave surfer from Devon who's dedicated his life to finding and surfing some of the biggest waves in the world. We're talking 60 foot and bigger. We talk a lot about fear, Andy's preparation to surf these monsters, and what it feels like to wipe out in 60 foot waves. Please welcome Andrew Cotton. So Andy, welcome. It's good to meet you.
And you, mate. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Whereabouts in the world are you?
I am in my van on the North Beach in Nazaré, Portugal.
Nice. I've seen your van. Looks lush.
Oh, it is, yeah. It's not technically not mine, but yeah.
That's better though, right? When you don't own it. It's like we used to say in the army that hire cars are the fastest cars that you can get because it's not yours.
Yeah, I can agree with that. It's good. Yeah,
that's good. It it looks pretty luxurious anyway, so a nice place to spend the winter.
Yeah, but you know, like it's been van life's been pretty good, and it is, you know, pretty, you know, five-star van sort of style. Yeah, it's been a while now. It's almost coming up to 6 months, so I'm done. I'm looking forward to a proper bed and a house, you know. So for sure.
Are you going to come back to the UK?
Yeah, I'll be home. Sort of wrapping up now and sort of like getting ready to come back. So probably next week I'll come back.
It's probably a good time to come back right now. As in, it's still quite cold and grey here, but summer's coming. The daylight hours are getting a lot longer.
Yeah, I'm North Devon, you know, April, May, June, we're pretty good at home. Good months, you know, not too busy. Then it goes a bit crazy over, you know, that main sort of 6 weeks.
Do you surf all the time? Do you surf all the time when you come back?
It's probably less, like, not as, like, I do surf a lot, but it's more about, you know, the past few years it's been more about, you know, when it's really good I surf for me, but it's more about, like, cruising with the kids, hanging out, you know, surf sorting a lot, just, yeah, like, fun.
Because obviously we're going to get onto big waves soon, but you've just been out in Nazaré for pretty much all of winter. So to then come back from there and go straight into the southwest of England and surf the Devon coast, there must be some.
It's, do you know, it makes you almost, I kind of dig it because it's like just decompression, you know, I think.
Yeah.
So like after like, because Nazaré can be quite intense and although that I love surfing and it's my passion and that, sometimes it's nice just to go surfing, you know, just cruising without having to put, you know, a safety vest on or, you know, or flotation or, you know, so all that, you know, so it is. And that's also where I grew up, you know, where I learned to surf, like Saunton, Croyd, Puttsborough, Willacombe, you know, that sort of stretch there, you know, so.
Yes, yeah, lovely part of the UK.
Yeah, it's great, and you know, the kids are there, and they both love the beach and you know the sea too. So yeah, it's good to get home.
Yeah, so we were just talking before, and I just came back from Bali, spent winter over there, but kind of came back in March, and the seas. You know, I'm an amateur surfer, right? So the seas. 9 degrees and the skies are pretty gray and miserable, and I've gone from surfing, you know, board shorts and a t-shirt sometimes, to
I mean, there was some swell down here during the weekend, but I couldn't even stare at my wetsuit.
Yeah, it does get like that, doesn't it? You know, like, I think it's a test of commitment, isn't it? Like, especially once you've been spoiled, you know, with board shorts and sunshine, you know, like it definitely does test the old commitment, like wetsuits, car parks. Yeah, like wind, rain. Yeah,
I think I'm lucky that I missed the winter, the harsh winter, because we had some, or I wasn't here for it, but there was some snow. Yeah, and I always find that, you know, if you go surfing for 2 days, like I used to have a van, so I'd go surfing for 2 days, and that second day when you've got a wet wetsuit, and you've not been able to dry it off, and you're trying to put it on in a car park with stones digging into the bottom of your toes, and you're trying to get your booties on, and they're all covered in sand.
Yeah, it definitely tests it. You know, it tests your enthusiasm for sure. You know? But that's in UK surfing. You know?
So how's Nazaré been this winter?
It's been good. Yeah, it's been obviously the season sort of kicked off with like one of probably the biggest swells that we've sort of seen in some time, and then it's just been sort of been steady. It's been relatively busy. You know, like there's still been a lot of traveling surfers coming through, you know, and big wave surfing, you know, it's such a small community. So it's all, you know, it's the same, it's the same faces, you know, same guys, committed guys, pretty much on every swell, you know. So,
because it must be quite cold during the winter, the seas and.
You know, Portugal doesn't get the Gulf Stream, which, you know, is the warm water current which the UK gets. So the water's sort of same sort of temperature all year round here. I'm in like a 5 mil suit, you know, boots, gloves, you know, at times. It's not warm. But, you know, like I used to spend a lot of winters in Ireland, which is
but that's cold.
It's definitely colder. So
yeah.
So it's definitely it's a good place to you know, if you're going to spend the winter in Europe, then it's a good place. And want to surf big waves, it's a good place to hang out for sure.
Yeah. So I was doing some like, obviously I've followed you for quite a long time, Andy, as an avid surfer. But every time I watch your videos, like I was doing some catch up on you last night on YouTube, and every time I see your videos or big wave surfing, like it gets me fired up. You know, and I reckon there's, you know, if you Google, right, the top three most dangerous sports in the world, it's big wave surfing, base jumping, and high altitude mountaineering. And like I want to know, right, as a surfer, right, who's surfed, you know, who enjoys a 4 to 6 foot swell or 4 to 5 foot, right? A nice fun wave that you can just, you know, do some turns. How does it feel being on a, you know, 25 foot way plus, you know, 50 foot wave?
I don't know. Like it's hard to, you know, it's hard to sort of put that into words, but, I think the thing to remember is that, you know, I've been doing it for quite a long time, and it's not like the changing my relationship with you know, waves of size now is definitely changing and has changed. Whereas, like, you know, 10 years ago, 25 foot, like, you know, it was your anxiety, your fear, all was way more, you know, like, you know, it's a lot more stress going into it. Whereas like 25 foot now, 20 foot is like, you know, it seems like every other week we're getting a swell that's 20 foot at Nazaré. You know, like, yeah. So you sort of, your relationship changes with that, and you feel a lot more comfortable in that zone. And I think that's just surfing in general. Like I can remember like learning and growing up in North Devon and feeling, you know, way out of my comfort zone in like 3 to 4 foot Croyd, you know, and you battle that zone for a while, and the more you do it, the more you push your limits at your home spot, you know, that 3 to 4 foot becomes more comfortable, you know, and then it's like, oh yeah, this is, you know, this is like, easy now. I'm really super comfortable on 3 or 4 foot. And then you push it again. You know, you have that opportunity to maybe, you know, like once or twice a year, there'd be some, you know, bigger waves at your home break, and then you get to test your comfort zone again. So for me, it's just been a constant, you know, I don't know, like you're constantly pushing those boundaries of what you're comfortable in, you know, and sometimes you hit the limit where you're like, okay, right, this is it. I don't want to push it any further. You know, like I've hit that. Or some people don't find that limit. You know, they keep, you know, be comfortable or try and be comfortable as big as it gets, you know.
What do you think that limit is, and what affects it?
I think that the limit, you know, the limit's been pushed. It's been pushed quite a lot the last few years. I think for me, it's how fast you can go on a surfboard, you know, and because when you get into the waves now, which are like, you know, 60 feet plus, you know, they move, those swell lines move so fast. And sometimes I actually feel that, you know, you can't go fast enough on a surfboard, you know, like you
really,
you know, it's like, I think we did in the Nazare Challenge, the WSL Challenge last year, we were wearing some GPS stuff, and we were doing speeds like around 70K, 75K, 76K on a surfboard. It's, you know?
Yeah, so, it's that, crazy, right?
That's nuts.
Sorry. Yeah. I always feel with especially GoPro footage and a lot of camera footage actually doesn't do the sport much justice. You appreciate the size of the wave, but I always find with most sports, right, skiing, right, I've probably bought 3 or 4 GoPros, right, and I've probably strapped them on my head, strapped them on my ski, strapped them on my pole, and you look back at the footage of, you know, going down some pretty steep terrain with a couple of drops, and you look back at the footage and you're just like, I wouldn't do anything with that. Like, I wouldn't turn it into a movie.
It's always disappointing, isn't it?
It's so disappointing so many times. Even, you know, when you go with friends and they've just bought this GoPro and they get to the end and they're looking at the footage going, look at that. And I'm just like, no, I didn't.
I know. It's funny, the GoPro stuff, isn't it? Like, I found that on some of the bigger days that I've used, and you know, it actually looks small, but then sometimes, you're like,
it's definitely not small.
Yeah, no, but sometimes when it's like, it can be like 4 foot and at home, and it makes it look really big, you know, how it distorts the image and how, you know, like it doesn't.
Well,
really,
it's like if you look at Pipeline, right? Pipe could be, you know, I've got two friends that have, one's paddled out at it and another surfed it, and both of them say like at 6 foot, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, right? At 6 foot, Pipeline is like a, you know, the weight of that wave is so much heavier than say a 10 foot in the UK or even more.
Well, not even comparable.
Yeah. But the footage thing is interesting, right? Because I was looking at Nazare when you had the swells last year. And there was a side on camera view of I can't remember what surfer it was, but you could see the speed that they were going from the side angle.
Yeah, yeah.
As opposed to a front angle, you're not really appreciating as much the speed that you guys travel on a towing board, 6-7 foot?
6 foot. So your average board, like on those biggest days, would probably be around about 6 foot. And they're weighted, so like I can speak, you know, probably the average weight would be around about 9 to 10 kgs, and wow. Some of the heavier boards would be 12 kgs, some of the lighter ones maybe, you know, 8, 6, 7, 8. But that's personal weight.
What would you say a normal board is?
A normal 3. Board, I should imagine, would be, well usually surfing you want light as board as possible, usually, you know, like especially a short board. So I should imagine like be like a couple kgs maybe, you know. Mm-hmm. And but with the big wave sort of stuff, you're looking we put like lead in there or like little lead balls, just to, you know, you kind of want to get that momentum. So when the obviously wave, you want the board to just keep going, you know, and the weight does that, and it keeps it in the water, rather than like if you use a light board or the board's too light, you hit a chop and you know the board's never in the water, you know, because there's also it's so choppy and you're going so fast. So the weight on the board does do that and does help you like that. And some surfers like light boards, you know, but it will always be weighted. You know, it will never be normal composition. You know?
So you know, you talked before about how you almost normalize the wave size, so there's less anxiety and less fear. Do you, like, when do you get that now?
I sometimes, like, so anxiety and like I think to a degree, like when you're looking at the forecasts and you know, you see like where it could be, you know, 20, 40 foot, you know, but the unknown, you know, like there's always a bit of anxiety, but I think it's to do with like, you know, am I in the right place? Is there a better place to surf? You know, like all those sort of decisions, you know, like the decision making. And then when I decide where I'm going to go, so this year I haven't obviously pretty much just been in Nazaré the whole time because the travel thing's sort of been taken out of our hands. So, there becomes a point where like there's no point in being too, you just have to, you know, like getting in a good rhythm, breathe, yeah, sort of focus. There's a fine line, like because fear is definitely healthy and it's good. It's good to have that. But it can affect your decision making or how you're gonna ride a wave. I think, you know, like one of my friends sort of described, you know, fear's healthy, you know, like panic's not, you know, like, you know, you want to be panicking, you just want to, it's good to have a little bit of fear to keep you on, you know, on point, but you don't want to be panicking, you know, like, you know, making decisions, you know, like, so it is a fine line.
I can relate, like, when I was in the special forces, we'd go out, you know, most nights on jobs, and I remember when you've not, so we deploy every 2 years, and I remember the first kind of, you arrive in country, right, everything's new again, and you've been training / you know, semi-operations for the last 18 months, so you know, you're probably the most trained that you'll ever be when you turn up to this to the theater that you're operating in. And always, right, the first job, you're flying out on that helicopter, and it's the same, right, you're slightly anxious, there's some nerves, you don't really know what's going to go on. And then I think, you know, you do the second, you know, you do the first one, get that out of the way, you do the second one, you know, get that one out of the way. And the more you do, the more I find you build, almost like you build a sense of security around what you're doing, because
it's because it becomes normality. You know,
And you've been through a lot of the scenarios that maybe are going to happen in front of you, and run through them, and you've run your kit out, you've run, you know how it all feels, you know what the, you know, your weapon feels like, all that kind of stuff. So you normalize it very quickly.
Yeah, for sure. But you know, but you can never, and I think the worst, you know, when things go like, yeah, it's when you're feeling too. Sometimes my like, biggest injuries, or like, when, you know, is when you do get a little bit complacent. You know, like,
too confident.
Too confident. That's it. Yeah. So it is nice to have like that little bit of fear and anxiety just to keep you in check. But you don't want it too much, where like your surfing becomes too sort of conservative, or you know, you're not really surfing to your optimum. But then obviously you don't want to go too complacent, where you're making silly mistakes, you're falling, or you're getting hurt, or you're you know, because if you're falling or going too deep and not making waves, then obviously you're risking, you know, your safety team, or losing a board, or you know, like you know, not being ready for the biggest set of the day or whatever, you know, like, so it is a fine line. And it, but that's why I think, like, being here all season and in Portugal, because Nazaré, like, without a doubt, it's always, like, it picks up so much swell. It's always, like, you know, it's like the ultimate training ground for big wave surfing. Yeah. Paddle or tow, you know, yeah. It doesn't matter, you know, like, it's always massive. It's so it is a good place to train and sort of push those limits and see how comfortable you are. And so when the day of days does come, you sort of, you know, a little bit more prepared, you know.
Yeah, could you just explain a little bit more about Nazaré? Just because I understand a lot of people listening might not.
Yeah.
You know, I'm probably a bit of a, you know, I probably know more than the average person about surfing.
So Nazaré is turned into one of the sort of one of the big wave proving grounds, pretty much, which is strange. So it's a small, well, relatively small, like, fishing town, about an hour north of Lisbon, and it's only really been surfed big in the last 10 years. So there's always has like a strong surfing community, and you know, there's always been a lot of bodyboarders and surfers pushing the limits here, but it's only been surfed sort of really big the last 10 years. And then just in the last 5 years, you know, there's been, I don't know, countless world records broken, and it gets the biggest waves in the world, without a doubt. And that the simple fact is, and the reason the waves get so big, is it has this crazy underwater canyon that comes straight into the beach and finishes like literally like on the headland. And the swells, there's like a refraction process. So obviously the swells sort of travel quicker in the deeper water in this underwater canyon, which is really deep. And then they refract, and then, you know, they end up bouncing across the beach, which is obviously shallow, and they create these giant peaks, you know, which sometimes doesn't even look surfable sometimes. You know, you're like, you check it and you're like, how are we going to surf that? Like, but people do. And they, you know, and the boundaries have been pushed and get pushed every year, you know, every year.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
For me,
if anyone listening hasn't ever heard of Nazaré, like, just get, you know, go on YouTube, Google it, or, you know, and just watch a couple of videos. Like, I think I see and witness what, you know, the unsurfable being surfed every year. You know, like, where I can remember, like, you know, a few years ago, you're thinking, oh no, yeah, you know, it's not surfable, and then someone just, you know, breaks down the boundaries and does it, and now it's a norm, you know, like, and everyone's doing it, you know, like. I think
and what is it? Is it size, or is it the steepness of the wave? Is it getting in a barrel?
It's the size and unpredictability of the waves and the power in the ocean. You know, like, it's just insane, you know, and there's no, unlike a lot of big waves spots in the world, so, you know, you have the classic like Mavericks or Jaws in Hawaii, you know, there's the waves break in a very similar spot every time, and there's a nice safe channel, and you can sit in a boat and watch the waves, whereas like Nazaré is not like that. It's just like giant shifting mountains breaking everywhere, you know. And
It's a beach break, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a beach break.
Is it classed as a beach break?
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, you know, it's intimidating, and often the worst wipeouts and the worst situations aren't actually surfing. It's when you pull off a wave, and then the wave behind is like even bigger and a little bit wider, and then, you know, and then you caught inside, and you know, there's always. Amazing jet ski carnage, you know, like it's just so gnarly. And it is like I'm sat here now, like literally sat by the beach, watching the waves. It's like, you know, 6 feet, and it's a super, it's a really good beach break, like from like 2 foot all the way up, you know, 6 foot, 8 foot, 10 foot, and then it just, you know, it's still breaking, and so it's still surfable, probably, you know, up to 100 foot. You know, it's just crazy. It's one place, and I'd recommend, like, if you ever get a chance to, even if you're not interested in surfing, if you get a chance to watch the waves on a big swell at Nazaré, it's definitely worth doing, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of that iconic view spot with the with the lighthouse, and I think you've only got to Google pictures of Nazaré to see that iconic image of, you know, a towering 70-foot wave
and the lighthouse. And that,
yeah. How, yeah, like, you know, when I was in Bali, we had a big swell come through, and I was surfing with a guy who's way better, and we actually paddled out at a spot called Temple's Left. I think it's called something else, but we called it that because it's next to a temple. But we turned up, and I'm not a great surfer. I've probably surfed for 6 or 7 years, but off and on because I was in the military at the time. And you know, the last 2 years are probably the most that I've ever surfed. So we turn up to this Temple Left, big swell, and everyone's turned up, right? All the locals, all the good surfers turn up, and I'm looking out, and you can see it's probably like, you could tell it was like double overhead and a half. So, you know, probably about 18 foot faces breaking, you know, Indo size, Bali size. And there was two people in the water surfing. So the way you get in, you go down these ladders, and there's a sketchy little rock area, and you've got to time it right. Cause the water's, you know, at that stage, there's a lot of moving water around and a lot of undulating swell and a bit of backwash. And there's a big channel that, you know, for people that don't know what a channel is, the channel's just where the water channels into an area and takes you out. And you've got to time it right between the waves, where you can just jump out onto this little beach, and then just you're out onto the water as fast as you can before getting smashed on the rocks. And at the time, these two surfers had come back in, so there's no one out there, right? And me and there was an Aussie guy and my British mate, we paddled out, and those two were way better than me, right? And we're sat in the water, and you know, luckily there's a channel that takes you around, and there's a smaller shelf coming off the main peak, right? And I was sat there, and I've been in some pretty hairy situations, right? And I think like feeling the power of the ocean, of these, you know, what I deem to be massive faces that were breaking right next to me. And right, so, you know, my mate caught one, the Aussie guy caught one, and I was, because no one else around, right? It was big enough that no one else wanted to come in the water. And I'm sat out there on my own on the board, and this, you know, 18 foot easy breaks right next to me, barreling section, like, you know, 20 meters from where I was. I don't think I've ever felt that scared in my life, or that, you know, I instantly started, you know, the shake started to come out a little bit. You know, and I've been in some airy situations, right? For pretty much the majority of my life. And I ended up just, yeah, I think I paddled in, and I got a few of the smaller sections right. There was probably a 6 to 8 foot shelf that was coming off that wasn't really rideable. It was quite lumpy. But I remember coming out of the water, no one else had paddled out. And I just remember, I don't know, like I felt such a buzz from seeing that and being so close to it and witnessing it. I wanted to get back in again and try it again. And I was a bit gutted that I hadn't gone for one of the bigger waves at the time. And I think, you know, we had the wrong boards. We were all on like a short board set up. So, you know, speaking to the other two lads, you know, they were saying that we needed bigger board, you know, probably needed a small gun to surf. Yeah, yeah. But I was like a little bit gutted that I just hadn't gone for one. And even if I'd have wiped out, just felt what it feels like to be in a bigger wave than, or the biggest wave that I've probably surfed.
Yeah, like, you know, the ocean's, you know, like, it's intimidating, isn't it? You know, like, and it can make you feel, even when it's...
I'd say it's, for me, it's possibly one of the most intimidating areas on this planet.
Yeah.
Because we're not designed to be in the water. We're designed to move on land. So if we're in the mountains, we're on land. If we're, you know, in the jungle, we're on land. If we're in the Arctic, we're on land. But once you go into that water, it's so different than anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and that's the thing. It's, you know, we sort of, you know, when we talk about, I do like these courses, like breath training and mindset courses with my trainer, Andrew Blake. And the one thing we sort of say is, like, you know, when we're sort of talking about like wipeouts or surviving wipeouts, like regardless of the size of the wave, yeah, it doesn't matter whether it's 2 foot, whatever, it doesn't matter. We're not talking about big waves, it's about, you know, being comfortable in the water. And one of the main things that I found is that it's about, like, not, like, letting go, like, not fighting. So, like, you know, like, when you, you know, if you were to get a wave on the head or you were to wipe out, you know, like, being able to, like, just embrace that. Like, because the first thing we want to do, natural survival instinct, is fight that, you know, like, is to, like, sort of move your arms, move your legs, you know. And that sort of thing's, like, you're just going to expel oxygen, you're just going to knack yourself out, and you're never going to. Like, you're never going to win. Like, doesn't matter. Like, you're not going to win. So it's about, like, and that, I think that's like what I learned with, you know, especially like the bigger wipeouts, you know, is just being able to just completely turn off, you know, turn the brain off, turn, like, almost surrender, you know.
Like, obviously you've done this for a long time. Do you feel that's an instant reaction now when you know that, you know you're coming off the board, you know, you take a jump or you do whatever. Do you instantly feel that, or are there some moments where you're this is going to go wrong? Because you had the bad crash, didn't you?
Yeah. But weirdly, I think when I'm in the zone and when the waves are big, I find it easier. Like, some of the worst wipeouts that I've had, probably like at home at like 4 foot Croyd, when you're not expecting to be held down and you're not, you haven't gotten the headspace for it, you know, and you just get, and you're sort of taking it all for, like, I know, it's just at home, it's just like nothing, you know, and you get a kick in, and then you're like, you start moving a bit quicker than you should do, you know, like, panic sets, and you're like, ah, you know. But when you get in that headspace, like, you know, I can, you know, you kind of got to enjoy it. And I learned that. I had very early on in my career, I was surfing with a Hawaiian guy called Garrett McNamara. And I was just there to do safety for him. So I was just driving the ski, doing safety for him. He was paddling. It was one of the, like, I think it was like the second year we were in Nazareth. It was like 2011 or something. And we'd been tow surfing, you know, with the jet ski, towing in all day. And then he wanted to paddle. And it was like, yeah, it was solid, like 60 feet. It was beyond, from my point of view at that point, it was like beyond the edge of, like, is it even paddleable, you know? And he jumped off the jet ski, and within like a few minutes, the set was coming. And then it became very apparent that, like, he wasn't going to make it over the set, and he wasn't in the position to turn around and paddle for this wave. But I also wasn't in the position to rescue him. Like, there's just no way I could have gotten, rescued him, got him on the ski, and driven out of there safely. So I'm a little bit further out, and I realise that he's going to get this wave on the head. Like, and it's massive. It's like 60 feet. It's massive. And it's before, like, the days of, like, inflatable, like, vests. He just had a bit of float on him. Like,
Andy, can you just... I'm just thinking about people that don't know, like, ski's obviously a jet ski that you use to rescue people and tow people in, and then vest.
So nowadays we have, like, inflatable vests, which we can which we can have like CO2 canisters in, which you can inflate. And they're sort of relatively new, you know, and pretty much now, like, all when the waves are big, you generally have like a safety jet ski, you know, or a team or something like that to sort of keep you safe and help you push it, you know. And that was generally my job for Garrett. And as this sort of wave was about to break on Garrett, I saw him get off his surfboard. Like, he tried to swim down. He couldn't really penetrate the water because he had too much float on. And then this wave goes. He gets sucked over with this wave, like, and just disappears. Like, just disappears. And I was obviously worried. I was, you know, and I went in with the jet ski looking for him. Couldn't see him. Then I had to. And then another wave came. He hadn't surfaced. So he had like a two wave hold down. He had like a two wave hold down. He disappeared. Then I started to go into panicking a little bit, like, you know, like, is he going to be alive? Is he going to be passed out? Is he, you know, and then he just pops up out of the water and, and I thought he would either be completely, like, either, like, almost died or, like, in shock or freaking out or angry at me for not being able to rescue him before the wave got him. And he just had this huge smile on his face, like, wow! And it was, like, and he dropped. Like, he absolutely loved that. You know, like, he loved that sort of not being in control, that, like, that thing that everyone else fears, you know, like the unknown, the wipeout, the being held under, like he loved it and embraced it. And that enabled him to put himself in those positions. And ever since then, I've been like, okay, right. So you've got to learn to enjoy the most uncomfortable situations. You've got to learn to love those. And then, you know, and that enables you to enjoy it, enabled you to push your surfing limits, you know?
It's one of those things, right, that's so easy to say. But
yeah.
I'm thinking back to that, you know, that big 18-foot face that I was sat next to. And you're completely right in what you say, right? You've got to let go. You've got to relax. You've got to almost learn to enjoy those harsh, you know, the wipeouts for what they are. But at the same time, when you're sat there, like, or, you know, for me, for when it's that unknown, like, those feelings are still there.
Yeah. Yeah. But it is, yeah, learning to... And I think that's the same with, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's surfing or not, but it's training, you know, like learning to enjoy the worst when you're really this sucks. Like,
yeah,
you have to enjoy that. Otherwise it's not worth doing it. You know, like,
I want to get onto training and how you prep for the big waves. But, like, what is it, like, how does it feel to be in, you know, a what you would class as a bad wipeout? So, obviously, a wipeout is when, you know, you're either not going to make the drop or you're not going to catch the wave and you bail, but you know, tactically bail, jump into the water, or you've took off at the wrong spot and you basically, the wave takes you and smashes you right and you come off the board.
For me, like, it's never about, it's always about the impact, you know, like being hit by... that much energy, you know, and I, like, the only way I can describe that is, because it's funny, because everyone always sort of says, oh, it must be the drowning or like the not being able to breathe is the scary part, but, you know, it's never been like that for me. It's always been like being hit, it's like almost being hit by in a car accident, you know, or yeah. Like, probably rugby tackled really, really hard, yeah. Like, you know, so it's always the impact, which has always scared me. And it's always been, that's always been like the worst injuries. Like, I don't think I've ever had a situation where I thought I was going to drown or like not, you know, that I really, really needed to breathe. I've always been quite comfortable in the water like that. So it has been the impact. You can break legs, break arms, tear muscles. And, you know, for me, I know that, you know, like, I hit the water so hard a few years ago, in 2017, and I broke my back, and that was just from being hit by a wave.
I rewatched the video of that yesterday, and you know, you can see like when, you know, and I'll get your explanation of it in a minute, but you can see when that white water hits you, how the speed and like how far it pushes you into the, like across and into the water.
Yeah. It's like we have that, you know, like I suppose, oh, you know, it's water. It's, you know, it's night. The water's night. It's like hitting concrete. You know?
Yeah. It's like at that speed.
The truck and I'm falling on concrete. Yeah. You know? Especially, you know, like we just said, you know, we're going at speeds of 70K, you know, or, you know, 70 kilometers an hour. So you're falling and being hit by like a moving mountain. It's the impacts. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough on the body, it is for sure. You know, like I definitely at the end of a season, I definitely feel it. You know, like feel like I'm looking forward to a few weeks off and a bit of recovery.
Yeah, I bet it's it's like a rugby game, right? You're getting nature is throwing you around literally.
Yeah.
And you are, you know, you are hanging on pretty much and just surviving and, you know, making sure that you're having as much fun, I guess, as, I mean, would you call it fun?
Yeah. I do. And I have, because I thought about, you know, after my big injury a few years ago, you know, I sort of was toying with the idea, you know, like, what am I doing? You know, is this really... What am I doing? Because you know, you're not like, you know, it's not, you're not like, yeah, it's, I'm very, very fortunate to call it a job, but you know, I'm not earning like loads and loads of money, you know, or like, you know, it's not like, it's completely passion driven. And I was like, oh, do I really want to do this again? And then you get back out, you know, the first sort of session, you're sort of like in 50-50, like, is this really what I want to do? And then you catch a couple of waves, you're like, oh, yeah, this is, you know, it was all, you know, this is what I want to do, you know, like, this is why I do it, you know.
Is it because the rush that you must get from catching a big wave must be hard to beat, you know? And I've always had this thing where I'm conscious that the more excitement I have doing whatever activity it might be, right? This year I'm racing cars. Before it was, you know, testing myself in the mountains. And I'm conscious that the more of those highs that you feel, the more you want, right? Because, you know, for example, going and climbing Everest, the 2 or 3 months after that, when you come back and you're back in normality, whether it was, you know, going back into the military or, you know, just going back into, you know, being in a house and sleeping in a bed, there's a level of depression.
Yeah.
And I don't mean depression as in like I'm sat there and feeling depressed, but you know, you've had this extreme high moment of summiting Mount Everest and there's a lot that goes into that, which it's the, you know, it's the same with you. You put a lot of energy and effort into training, into preparing mentally and physically, that when you finally reach that pinnacle, there's, you know, there's that high that comes with that and that feeling of extreme achievement that when you come back to a level of normality, I literally find that like I go through, and you know, the toll that it takes on your body, you know, I go through easy 2 months of just struggling to, you know, just struggling to find, I don't know, happiness almost, or find as much joy in things.
Yeah. I get that, and you know, I understand it, and you know, I think we all, as like anyone with, you know, any athlete or anyone who does, you know, like has those extreme highs, whether it be, you know, a football match, a rugby match, or, you know, an achievement, whether it's climbing or surfing or whatever, like the you know, after match or after season lows can be quite low, but I think for me, like learning to manage those have been sort of a big part of my sort of development as a as a surfer and as an athlete, you know, like understanding them and like I have more tools and more more reasons to get through them, I suppose. But that, yeah, they can be, because yeah, you feel like sometimes I'm like disappointed, like I put so much effort into like a 6 month window, which might actually the pinnacle. You never know, like it, I don't know. You're like, what was that? What was that all for? And they're like, and not.
Yeah, because that's another weird one, right? And humans are weird, right? Because you know, for example, you just spent 6 months trying to catch massive waves, and you could like retrospectively look at that and just go, what you achieving, or like what is the actual purpose of it? I get that. I get that. I look at it and I think, I don't know, I think the older I get, the more I look at climbing, and I'm looking at, I've got a garage full of climbing kit that I've not used for ages. I'm like, I don't know. I don't understand what I'd get from then. I wouldn't get the same kick that I might have got at the start. It's a funny one.
Yeah, the things that get me through it is like, you know, I love now, like when I get back from, like, I'll get back from the season, get back home, and then sort of like decompress for a couple of weeks, and then it's like almost thinking about next season. You know, I start then building up. You know, like, okay, right, start a bit of training, so I spend loads of time on the bike, and I sort of then I'm thinking about, okay, right, you know, what went well this season, you know, what did I enjoy, what did I dislike, and then trying to make the next season better. I think that's what sort of helps me get through it. You
know, planning, just having the next, that focus.
Yeah, having the next thing. But, you know, like, and I think that's also is what hard is when you do get, you know, the injuries and stuff like that, and then it's like all that uncertainty pops in, and like, will I be better, and, you know. But there are, you know, I've been really fortunate to sort of have good support network around me to help me get through those lows and those sort of like uncertainties. And definitely, like, my, regardless of anything, I think just being active has always helped. Mm. You know?
Like, whether, yeah, massively.
Not in like necessarily whether it's surfing, but like just being fit and healthy, you know, and doing training or whatever it is, swimming, cycling, being outdoors has always helped.
Yeah, I think, yeah, same for me. And I get, you know, like I said, amateur surfer, right? But I still get, you know, when there's not been waves for a while down here, and, you know, especially now with this, whatever lockdown's going on, it's, I do miss, or I don't get the same feeling, right, as if there's constantly waves and you're constantly getting in the water, even just to get in the water, right? Just that feeling of being in the water. And, you know, I surfed last weekend and the conditions weren't that great, but we got in, and it was the feeling that you get from just getting out in the water and just, you know, even if you don't catch any good waves and it's just a load of wind swell, you get such a physical, I don't know, an endorphin hit or mental buzz from it that,
it's just being in the sea. And like you say, like, it doesn't have to be with a surfboard, you know. I think, you know, there's loads of studies and, you know, people are sort of, you know, sharing their experiences now with just literally being in the ocean, whether it's with a surfboard or not, or just going for a quick swim, you know, for 2 minutes. And, you know, like, how that effect it has on your mental health and how it makes you feel. You know, it's massive, massive benefits. Right?
Do you do any kind of holistical training, any like breath work or meditation in preparation for going back out to Nazaré?
Yeah. You know, like, breathing has been a big part of sort of managing, you know, those highs and lows, as we talked, you know, about. Especially through some of my injuries, like, I found it a really good vehicle for, you know, to help me deal with those sort of, you know, like well, you know, I do some, me and my training partner, like Andrew Blake, done some really fun stuff, which has been good training. So, like, we did this, like, he we did this breath training. It was like he named it like altitude. When I was in Druid, we did this altitude training in bed, which was just like loads of little breath holds, you know, moving your hands, and it was like really pushing you to the mat. So it's really good, you know, good to sort of take your mind off not being able to, you know, run or cycle or, you know, surf or do those things, you know. So that's really helped. And also some really good, because me personally, I'm not much of a meditator, but you know, doing like some of the YouTube Wim Hof stuff and that sort of thing has really helped me, you know, almost get into that, you know, meditate, you know, like breath hold.
Yes, yeah,
it's good to listen to those guided breath hold stuff, and that's really, really good.
Yeah, it's there's a definite connection between, you know, meditation, breath work, even, you know, I like cold, right? So getting in cold water, whether it's in the ocean or even just having a cold shower, I find first thing in the morning, you know, if I can jump into a cold shower and that be the first thing that I do before I even drink water or put the kettle on, I find that one, everything else after that is easy, any decision, because, you know, the hardest decision was getting out of bed and getting in that cold water.
Yeah.
But also the, you know, the wake up factor of what it does to your body just to get, you know, get you started before, yeah, you know, you've done anything is so good.
Yeah. So do you find like, do you have like a good routine? Is that your thing? Like it's all about.
Yeah. I've got a solid morning routine.
Yeah.
But then I say that because I don't know, like I'm probably the most productive lazy person that I know. Because I still think I'm really lazy, right? And it might come to a Saturday where the routine just goes out the window and I lie in, but then feel a little bit guilty for it. But yeah, I'm like, at the minute, since getting back from Bali, I'm up at 6. I do like 20 minutes meditation and then I read. So I come downstairs, make some coffee, and I'll read till 7 o'clock. And then 7 o'clock, I go out and I'll do a walk around, like just around the house kind of thing for about an hour. And then I come back in, make breakfast, and then I can start the day. And I feel like for me, you know, I'm coming back in off this walk at 8 o'clock in the morning. You know, I've had my breakfast by 8:30. I feel like having achieved so much in that morning.
Yeah, yeah.
It just puts me in such a positive headspace for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
And then you go and deck 10 pints and then you just throw all that out the window, which happens sometimes, yeah. You know?
Yeah, but
we, we can't all be perfect, Andy, you know? We can't all be perfect.
That's it. Yeah.
Do you have any kind of prep or...
Yeah.
Do you have like any kind of mental, I don't know, self-talk or... ways you prepare to get in the water?
So, you know, like now, like I've worked out, like I have for a swell, like a big wave session or a big storm is coming, like I have like a countdown, and I have like a 5-day sort of schedule, which I sort of came up with just to help me, because I think other times when I didn't have that, and the schedule might be like, you know, organizing, booking tickets, but then like trying to stretch, you know, not looking at the swell charts or particular swell charts too much. You know, like it sort of just helps me organize the run up to the event. Because I often would like self-sabotage, you know, like think about things too much, like, you know, get down the rabbit hole, sort of like stress too much, and then by the time
so easy,
yeah. And then by the time the moment comes, like I've either talked myself out of it or, you know, got in a bad headspace, and it is about headspace. You know, a lot of it is because you've done all the training training's done months in advance. You know, it's the lead up to the event, to the race, to the surf, to the, you know, to that moment. Is the key, you know, and it doesn't matter, like you don't have to go and train hard 3 days before the actual event, you know, because you should have been doing that the year, you know, 6 months before, you know.
Yeah. You almost want to turn up in the best shape that you can be, right? Yeah. And that means well rested, plenty of energy in the muscles.
Yeah.
No injuries or limited amount of injuries.
Yeah.
You don't want to turn up overtrained.
Hurt a little bit, tired. All those things. You don't learn those things. If I wish, if I could talk to myself, 10 years ago, those are the sort of things I'd have been like hammering in, where I'd often turn up to swells like the night or the morning, like haven't slept because I've been traveling for so long. The moment before the classic would be like, give me a swell like 2 days time and I'd do a crazy training bender, like in the gym, like, what am I doing? I get hurt in, haven't slept, and then I'm about to go and try and surf, 80-foot waves. It's like, and the same goes for
I think like I'm go on mate
well no I was gonna say same goes for like recovery. Like I'd often be terrible at recovery.
The swell,
and you go for a few beers and then you don't sleep, and then you travel back, and but now it's all about, for me it's all about recovery as well, like recovering really well and being ready for the next mission,
I feel like that's an age thing. I was, for some reason, we're probably very similar, as in you've got an internal self-destruct button. Whereas, if you train, you want to train as hard as you can every time you train. And for me, sometimes I wouldn't feel satisfied until I'd left the gym covered in sweat, feeling that I'd worked harder than everyone else in the gym. Same when I went running, right? Last lockdown, I started running again, and I go from a 6 miler, that'd creep up to a 10 miler quite easily. And I'd be coming back in with sore knees, right?
Yeah.
Fast forward two and a half weeks, I'm trying a marathon. Yeah. and it's all on road and there's no need for it. And I feel like the older I get, I'm still young, but the older I get, the more I just look at, right, what do I need to be able to do to perform doing what I do now? Like, I'm living in my house like pretty much every day. I don't need to be able to run a marathon or lift heavy weights or, I don't need to be able to do these things. I need to, have a base level of fitness, which means that I can do any activity that I want, whether it be go surfing, whether a mate turns around and says, let's go for a run, or I need flexibility, because obviously the older we get, the more supple we need to stay. But yeah, I've kind of gone, for me, I'm like you, Andy, right? Sleep. I've slowly realized how important sleep is and how good you feel from getting a full night's sleep.
Mm. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So that's, it takes a while to realize that, but I've slowly come to realize that.
Yeah.
So what's next? What have you got in the pipeline?
What's that?
What's next for you? What's next?
What's next? Well, just trying to get home.
Yeah.
And we're talking about trying to get back to sort of normality things, hanging out with the kids. School runs probably, kids clubs, all that sort of stuff.
Do you get halfway through a school run, do you just all of a sudden feel like, oh man, I'd just love to be back in Nazareth? And
not straight away. I think towards like September, give it a few months. Like I kind of like to, get into it, embrace it. And savor those moments. But then I can't stand missing. So if there's like, if I was at home and there was like a huge swell somewhere, those can be quite torturous. And not only for me, but for anyone I'm around, I suppose, because I'm like, wanting to be somewhere else. But other than that, I enjoy being home, but then it's good to be home, but it's good to be also focusing on the next season, or the next sort of goal setting, or next project, or the mission. For sure.
Awesome, Andy. Well, when you come back to the UK, let's try and get out on the water.
Yeah, you'll have to come. Yeah, have to come down to Croydon or something, and we'll have to hook up for a surf for sure.
Yeah, definitely. It's been great talking to you. Where can people find you if they want to?
So yeah, like everyone on, you know, on Instagram and Facebook, my Instagram handle's Andrew_Cotty. And on Facebook, it's just Andrew Cotton Surfer, I think. So.
And I recommend everyone go to Andy's Instagram, and because it's full of basically everything that we've been talking about, big waves, pretty much.
Loads of content on there. So yeah.
Awesome. Cheers, Andy. Great to speak to you.
Yeah, and you. Thanks very much, mate.
Cheers, man. Thanks to our sponsors, Harley Davidson, who have helped make this latest adventure possible. Check them out at harley/davidson.com or give @harley_UKI a follow on Twitter. Thank you.